Michigan HockeyCast 6.26, where we're reeling in a Badger, a Sun Devil, a Bulldog, and maybe even a Tiger. Did it. You did an event. You did an event earlier this year that we talked about, where you watched mascots play in a game and run into each other, presumably. But this is slightly more high profile of an event. Was anyone at it, or were you there by yourself?
The NFL draft had a lot of people there.
So it wasn't just you?
Turns out that I think over the 3 days they had 700,000 there, is what they said.
And you went down there?
On Thursday. But it was not the most fruitful trip of all.
It wasn't the most fruitful? Where did you park? Did you park at MGM?
No, we parked out in Midtown. I was surprised that the traffic wasn't crazy at all getting down there.
What time did you go?
Oh, I wanted to go a lot earlier, but was unable to due to scheduling issues. So I got down there probably around 6 o'clock maybe. 6:30.
So that seems reasonable in terms of like wanting to be there in time for the action to start. It doesn't seem reasonable in terms of when the rest of the city's probably going to show up.
Yeah, I think the traffic I encountered, there was a little bit of it on 94, like inside the city limits, but it really wasn't much different than if you went to like a Tigers game on a Wednesday in June.
Right, because
like it just
most people are probably like partying and.
Yeah.
Hanging out and tailgating. I mean, it was a nice day.
Yeah, it was nice nice weather.
Maybe a little chilly at the end, but...
But I walked down there, and they had two separate areas. They had the draft day in the D area.
Okay.
And then they had the actual NFL draft, like, area.
So the first area is, like, a fan fest type thing?
No, it's a larger... It's just the more of the city. Like, the...
Okay.
The actual draft area was quite small. It was just... few blocks down
you
know, in different directions. And then the draft day in the D area was like a larger circle, like around.
What did you do in the larger circle?
You had to walk through a metal detector.
Okay.
And then once you were in there, then it was like, oh.
And what do you do, though?
There were food trucks.
Okay.
There were big TV screens with, you know, the draft being shown on them. There was a lot of live music.
Okay.
And that kind of
thing. So was it loud?
He was bustling.
I mean, bustling is a good
people
word.
People were out walking around, and so it was just really. Whereas the inside the draft area, which we never got into,
could you not?
By the time we got there, the gates were closed.
Oh, so
they hit because the attendance was off the chart.
Yeah,
they had to close the gates early,
because there were too many people.
Yeah, on multiple of the days.
So what do you?
Which I think was poor planning on the part of the NFL, because
they just. Undershot what they thought how many people were going to show up.
I'm just looking at it and saying, if you're the NFL, you're sitting there and saying there were a lot more people that would have gone in, would have bought merchandise, would have bought food, and we couldn't accommodate them because we didn't block off enough space for them. But again, I don't blame them, because if you look at attendance last year in Kansas City, they had 300,000 for the entire weekend.
Still a lot of people.
This one was 700,000.
Yeah, that's even more people.
So. The planning, I understand why it went awry a little bit, but honestly, if you wanted to go inside that area, the best time to do it would have been early in the afternoon, because
So you could just go in and leave, like it was is sort of like a bar where you can enter, and then once you reach capacity, in order for someone to go in, like people have to leave type of thing.
Yeah, but I don't think they ever reopened the gates once they closed them. But like my point is that even if they were still admitting people when I was down there, I would have gone in, watched like two picks and left, because I could see through the chain link fence that area.
Yeah.
And it was, and people were packed in like sardines.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no way to move. Yeah. You're just standing like this in a crowd, like a straight jacket on, trying to not bump into people. So I would have gone in there, looked around, and then left. Whereas, if you'd gone, like, I imagine earlier in the afternoon, it would have been easier to walk around and see whatever was going on in there.
I wonder if they had the draft, like, 3 years ago when the Lions are abjectly terrible, what the attendance would have been. Because, like, that's the thought to me is, like...
Well, you know, I think part of it was Lions fans being hyped up. That's a big part. And Detroit hasn't hosted an event like that in a long time. And but also it helps that Detroit is a drivable area, so to speak, that people can fly into Metro and get
to
see. My point is that next year in Green Bay, I imagine it will be much less attended.
There was a tweet that said both hotels have been booked.
But so my point is that the Bears hold the number one pick.
Yeah.
There were a lot of Bears fans there because obviously your team's got the number one pick and it's 3.5 hours away. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, so they, and it's drivable for Browns fans. It's drivable for Colts fans. It's drivable for Bengals, Steelers. Yeah. There were a lot of Steelers
fans. Even Packers.
Plus, there are a lot of Steelers fans.
Well, there just are anywhere. Yeah. You go to B-dubs and watch games and it's all Steelers fans.
And so, people from Canada can come. Like it's, you know, a lot of people could come to this event. So I think it was a good area for there to be a lot.
Plus, there were going to be Michigan players taken.
Yep.
So that didn't hurt, I would assume. Like, the thing for me with the draft is, like, you know, I've watched it probably every year since back in, probably since you were born, right around that time, I would say.
Sure.
And, like, it sounds like a fun thing to go to. Like, just the idea of going and milling around for, you know, anywhere between 3, 4, 8 hours, whatever it is, and watching guys get picked. Because, you know, there's time in between picks. So it's not like you're sitting there, like, watching, you know, overtime NHL where, you know, there are no breaks and you're just like on edge all the time. Something happens and then you have nothing to do for 10 minutes.
It's very much a hang out and drink.
Right.
And
so the idea of it kind of makes sense to go down there, especially if the weather's nice. But the problem is like what you were saying, everyone else seemed to think that was a good idea too. And then you're just sort of wedged in. And like, you know, I've gone to football games and sat in the student section where you're just wedged in and you're like, okay, this is awesome because it's Ohio State. And if we win, it rules. But I don't like watching games like this.
Yeah, it was not a good scene if you're claustrophobic.
Or just wanted to be in the same space for 5 hours,
I mean,
6 hours.
Honestly, I wasn't that disappointed about not getting inside the gates because I still got a good feel for just the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of people in the draft day in the area. I mean, walked around and went by American and Lafayette. And of course, there was line down the street for that. And walked over by Comerica Park and where the old Chili's Chili was, and which is now the Tin Roof. And there are people everywhere.
Sure.
You know, line out the door.
Yeah, you probably can't get in anywhere.
We walked over by Ford Field and they had a draft party going on there, but it was a ticketed event.
Oh, so you could go into Ford Field
and watch there, yeah.
Did they did they sell out?
I wanted to just, well, I don't know if they were still selling by the time I got there.
Uh-huh.
I walked over there because I just wanted to see if you could go in like the Lions team shop.
Oh, yeah.
Because like a lot of people had the new jerseys. There were like a lot of
people.
Like the black jersey already.
Were you thinking about buying one?
I wasn't going to buy one, but I wanted to just look at what they had in the team shop. I like window shopping, so.
Okay. Good. No, that's fun. It's a good pastime.
I've been in the Viking Stadium and the FedEx Forum in Memphis, both in the off season.
Yeah.
Just walked into the team shop to walk
around.
Well,
the U.S. Bank is supposed to be awesome.
It looked nice from the outside.
Yeah, like they've had soccer events there and stuff that look...
Point is, even if there's not a game going on, I like walking in the team shop just to see what they got.
Just to, yeah,
you know.
Sure.
But anyway, they were like, no, you gotta have tickets. I'm like, no. Okay.
You have to spend money in order to potentially spend more money. Yeah.
So anyway, ended up tracking back to the Bucharest Grill over.
Yeah.
Nice place.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been there before.
Food?
Yep. Got dinner and that's where we watched the first about 10 picks.
Mm-hmm.
And then once McCarthy was picked, then I got in the car and went home. And by the time there was no traffic, so I got home in time to see the Lions pick.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice.
Oh, so you didn't even stay for the Lions pick?
No, that was...
Was that never the idea?
The draft takes forever. And
yes, I'm aware.
The way that the scheduling worked, it was going to be better to get back in town.
I see.
So, anyway.
So, how many hours would you say you were down there?
Yeah, probably 3.5.
Okay. And that was enough for you?
Yeah. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
The Lions didn't pick till like 11:30.
But, I mean, everybody was waiting for that,
the
right?
The draft takes forever, so...
We were talking about it. You know, other people and joking, like, you know, it would have been slightly amusing if they would have traded out of the first round.
Yeah.
And then 700, you know, 300,000 or 400,000 people are all like, yeah.
The best part of the draft was on TV, when the Packers picked.
Yeah.
And you see that Packers fan that they cut to, and he was like, what? Who did we pick? And he, like, he was looking really confused.
Oh.
And there was a Lions fan next to him just pointing at him and taunting him. And, and then they had the when the Niners picked.
Mm.
And they had this Niners fan right in the front row. And they cut to him right after the pick. And he goes, "What?" Just screams right into the camera.
It probably didn't matter who they picked at that point. That was his planned response. It just feels like that.
So, overall, I thought the Detroit sign, which everyone was talking about online, I actually saw it a week before the draft when I was headed downtown for something, and I thought the sign looked fine. I didn't understand why they put up a Detroit sign on the bank of 94, like inside the city limits.
Okay.
And it was a huge thing online. Everyone was talking about it.
Yeah.
That they did it, you know, they released an artist rendering. Everyone loves artist renderings. And of what the sign was going to look like. And then they were putting the sign up, and everyone was like, "This looks like trash. Why did we spend money to put this up?" And I saw it in person. I thought it was fine. Especially at night when it was lit up. It looked fine. I didn't have any issue with
it. So they're going to keep it, or was it just for the draft?
I don't know. They planted a bunch of flowers, like on the side of the highways and in downtown, and they put up a bunch of new street signs and stuff.
It's like when they built that fancy top of the bridge for the Super Bowl
bridge.
Yeah.
In Taylor.
Yeah.
But there was a good post on Facebook that I saw shared on Twitter that was like, "Detroit got out the nice china because guests are finally coming over."
For the first time, basically, since the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So a lot of people were saying after the draft ended that this is going to, you know, the NHL or the NBA should give the All-Star game and all that stuff that shows they can host events. And I'm like,
to Detroit?
Yeah. And I'm like, sure. The problem is, I'm pretty sure that I have no knowledge that the owners of those teams have indicated that they want those events.
Well, but not every year, but generally speaking, those events are not in like cold weather places because it's usually in
NBA
like February.
NBA is.
They go to cold weather
they
places?
They were just in Utah last year for the All-Star game.
Huh.
The NHL has more of the problem with players being babies. But
yeah, that's what they say about hockey players. They're all a bunch of babies.
They are.
I mean, they went to Toronto, but Toronto's different, right? Like, Toronto's like
I think the
hockey
next
center
two
of the
are,
world.
I think the next two are Edmonton and New York Islanders, I think. I mean, the point
well,
is...
Well, Islanders have a new... Well,
so does Little Caesars. So that's the whole point. Yeah. Since they got Little Caesars, everyone was like, well, we built a new arena.
We should get the draft.
So we need to get...
Oh,
the All-Star game.
The All-Star game.
Like,
yeah.
That's generally what happens.
Yeah.
If you build a new arena, you are going to get an All-Star game. But my understanding is that you have to indicate you want those events. Like, the NHL and the NBA aren't just going to unilaterally say, you have to host the All-Star game. Figure out how to put this show on the road. Like, you have to bid for it. It's like the Olympics.
Because nobody wants it.
They just pick you. And I'm not aware that the ownership for the Pistons or the Red Wings is sentient, first of all.
Well,
and if they are, I'm not sure they're aware that the All-Star game exists.
Is available.
Whereas the Lions have very much courted these events. Like, president of the team, Rod Wood, his entire job is to lobby the NFL. I mean, they worked for years to get the draft, and now they're back at it on the Super Bowl. So,
yeah, okay.
They want to do those events. And if you work hard, then you'll get them. So,
yeah, I mean, the Super Bowl is probably slightly more difficult to get than an All-Star game because, like...
Well, they've had some issues with, like, the hotel stuff.
Well, but also, the Super Bowl is
the NFL,
coveted by not just NFL stadiums, but, like, I mean, it used to be at the Rose Bowl and in a bunch of different places like that. Whereas, you know, an All-Star game or even the draft in that now, it seems like it kind of just bounces around and rotates. And if you haven't had it in a while and you want it and you have not bad facilities, it seems plausible.
When they hosted it in 2006, you know, back then downtown was very different. And they didn't have a lot of hotel capacity at that time. And all the beat reporters were whining about how they had to stay in Southfield or whatever.
And shuttled in.
And so the league has told them that the downtown needs to build more hotels in order to get the Super Bowl back. But they're working on it, and hopefully this event will strengthen their case, and we'll see if they can indeed get it back. But
so all in all, you're glad you went?
And yeah, I don't feel like it was a mistake.
Did you have to? You wouldn't have to buy a ticket to get into.
You just had to sign up online.
Oh,
So okay. I'll get NFL emails in my inbox for the rest of the time.
Because you can't unsubscribe. All right. This is, I assume, probably going to be our last hockey cast of the season, now that we've talked about the NFL draft. We may do one in the summer, depending on, you know, if there are things to talk about, draft and updates of team comings and goings. But we thought that after grading all the players and areas of the team last week, we would talk about the new additions or probable new additions, since we do not have a definitive confirmation that who all is going to be in this class. You get sort of tidbits from different places, and we've pieced together the people that we can talk about, and then we'll quickly kind of go through the rest of the players on the roster that will also fit in. We can start at forward. I thought we'd start with the one confirmed forward transfer, William Whitelaw from Wisconsin, who was a freshman last year and drafted last summer in the 23 draft. Is that correct?
Yes.
So he has, last year for Wisconsin, he had 10 goals, 7 assists for 17 points. He's kind of a smaller guy, 5'9", about 172, according to his page with the Badgers when he was there. A little like Moldenauer, maybe a little smaller. Like, his production was similar. You know, getting 10 goals as a freshman is, you know, he's a third-round pick, so he's not going to be like the slam-dunk freshman that, you know, Michigan is sort of used to, that are the Brindleys and the Fantillis and McGroarty's, that kind of type. He's sort of a middle six piece, I think.
One thing with Whitelaw is he's quite a bit higher than some of the third round picks Michigan's had. He's a 66th pick.
Oh, you're talking about overall?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Hallam is 91 overall in the third round.
So he's at the end.
Moldenauer's 95 overall in the third round. Okay. Whitelaw's 66. That's a notable difference.
So he's like borderline
second
round.
Much closer to being a second rounder. It seems to me, I haven't really seen any of his game, just reading the Elite Prospect stuff. Appears to be a guy that can shoot the hell out of the puck.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
He can really skate. So it could offer some interesting possibilities where you could run a sort of let the horses out of the barn line with Whitelaw and Hallam.
Yeah, you'd need a center to keep up, but yeah.
It seems like he was a really bad fit in Wisconsin. I imagine that he probably committed under Tony Granato.
Yeah.
Decided to come in under Hastings, and then it just didn't.
Well, Hastings looks to be building a bit more of a defensive, older team, and that does not seem to fit Whitelaw's game, although.
And I think Michigan would be a good fit for him. They have the ability to develop guys offensively, so I think it makes sense, and he should be able to play in the middle of the lineup next season, and we'll see what he can do.
Peter did some research for some of these guys, and he said that he's also a Columbus draftee because, you know, Michigan's just taking all of the 23 Blue Jackets draftees, and that he's a little bit of a kind of an agitator, gets under the skin of opponents, kind of a, you know, Duke was a little like that sometimes, a smaller guy, but not afraid to mix it up. And I think like that's something that Michigan generally doesn't have. I mean, you look at Ernesi and Estapa, but like they're generally more of a finesse team.
Everyone's favorite cliche, makes you harder to play against.
Makes you hard, gritty, whatever. The fourth
makes you harder to play. That's what they, every team, every offseason, the NHL is looking to become harder to play.
I mean, aren't we all? I'm looking to be harder to podcast against. But a nice pickup. I think it's worth a shot. Michigan, obviously, we're going to talk about some guys, so they want to add some depth to their forward core, as they only had 14 and then 13 pretty soon after that. So bringing in a guy like that after a first year, I think that there's definitely a chance for a breakout and some upside with Whitelaw. The other guy that isn't confirmed, and I'm not sure if he's committed, there was some, you and I had traded some communication about him, but Evan Werner from Colorado College, it seems like Michigan might be interested in him. He kind of similar though to Whitelaw, 6 goals, 13 assists, 19 points, very, very similar production. Also sized very similarly, 5'8", 173.
Is he related to the Ladders?
The Ladders? The Werner Ladders?
Yeah, you don't know Werner Ladders?
I don't.
It's a famous brand of ladders.
Oh. Well, I'm taller than you, so I don't need a ladder for as many things as maybe you do, but Anyway, Peter's notes on Werner are mostly played on the fourth line, a little bit of second power play unit, more of a maybe a passer than a scorer, decent speed. I mean, that's going to be something that Michigan is going to generally be looking for, yeah, is they want to be able to skate.
His production looked all right in Colorado College. He was a good scorer in the USHL, so...
You think that there's some translation eventually,
yeah,
to college? Yeah, I mean, that would be fine if they wanted to grab him, too. I think that getting more guys is good. at least
the forward. Scoring depth is good.
Yeah. All right, we can move on to the freshmen now. So Michigan had, I don't know, how many forwards at one point? Like, it seemed like 7 or 8, but it's kind of clear that some of those guys are probably not coming in, so we won't discuss them. If they do, we can always preview them in the fall. But it seems pretty clear that 3 guys will be coming in and probably a 4th. The first guy we can talk about is Matvei Greeden, who is in Muskegon.
Yeah.
So he's already in Michigan.
How many other Russians do you think live in Muskegon?
Like that are like full on
ethnic Russians.
Russians
within recent, you know, maybe second generation.
And is there like a good restaurant that has borscht there? Or I'm guessing probably not tons.
I'm excited. We haven't had a Russian since I've been following Michigan team. So
I mean, they've had some Swedes over the years.
We had some Swedes. We had Adam Winborg.
Yeah, I mean Carl Hagelin.
Yeah, that was before I was following the team. But
well, okay, Winborg kind of played.
Wasn't Emil Orval from Sweden?
He wasn't here long enough for me to have looked up where he was from, honestly.
But Greeden, a really good player this season. He was right at the top of the USHL in scoring. He led the USHL with 83 points.
In how many games?
60 games.
It's pretty good. So not quite 1.3 a game.
I mean, points per game, he was 7th in the league behind, like, all the NTDP guys, which don't really count. So,
yeah.
More, you know, right there with another Michigan commit as the other guy at the top of the USHL, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, there's a pretty good track record of those kinds of players being able to come in and produce in college hockey right away. Like, I think back to Stephen Halliday at Ohio State, who was one of the top players in the USHL in scoring, and he came in and was basically point per game.
And he was ended up being a 4th-round pick,
Round pick, played 2 years, was point per game in both, and signed.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty usual thing. Greeden looks like he's going to be either late first or early second. I haven't looked at the scouting profile to figure out what is holding him back from, like, an NHL perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a pretty good, again, track record of those kinds of guys scoring levels in the USHL being good college players.
Well, Peter says he's strong without the puck, which is nice. It provides pretty good defensive coverage and situational awareness. He's a good distributor and has a hard release to go with his elite speed. That sounds like sort of the total package. Maybe he's not massive. He's 6'1", 185, but that's not small either.
No, that's...
And he seems like a guy who they'll get a year. And
he didn't turn 18 until March, so he played a lot of that year at 17. And he's a riser. He scored only 19 points his first season in the USHL.
Okay.
So he jumped from 19 to 83 in one off season.
So he is like...
So that's rocketed him up the board.
He is foreign, so it is kind of tough to project as to, you know, how much school he wants to attend, etc. But, you know, he seems like a guy who's probably at least a year and hopefully two. It's tough to probably push him past that if he's going to be a first rounder.
Yeah, hopefully he learned to speak English while he was in Muskegon.
That would be...
They can get him through admissions.
They speak a lot of English or Russian in Muskegon? I'm not sure. I don't think I've been to Muskegon. Have you been to Muskegon?
Yeah, briefly.
Okay.
I've been to Grand Haven a lot more than Muskegon.
I see.
I played at a course in Muskegon one time.
Did you? Yeah. What'd you shoot?
Not that well.
Not well enough to discuss on the HockeyCast? all right, so... He looks like probably the best or second best, tied for the best recruit Michigan's going to have. The guy that he's in competition with is Michael. Is it Hage? Hagee? Hage?
I don't know.
Age?
Off the top
is
of
the
my
H
head.
Silent?
I would have to
I've heard like that. 7 different pronunciations.
I think it's Hage. Personally.
I mean, that's what it looks
it's
phonetically.
It's got to be either Hage or Hague.
I mean, Cage, Rage.
You'd assume it's Hage because if Gage. It was Hague, I mean, we Nick Hague is. An NHLer, and his has the U.
His U, so Hage. Okay, so he's also projected to be a top pick. Another guy that's sort of greed inside, 6'1", 187, and he had like, right about the same points per game in point totals, or just slightly less?
Slightly fewer points, slightly better points per game.
Okay.
He is really rising up the draft boards. A lot of places still list him in like the low 20s, but I've seen some people that have him as high as 12 or 15 on their draft board. So probably a middle first round pick is your best guess there. He's been, again, he's been rising up. I know he's played really well at, I think, the U18s right now, wherever he's at. He only turned 18 a couple weeks ago, so he's on the younger side for his age range. He's probably the last of this pipeline that we've had, the Toronto metro area to Chicago Steel pipeline, because yeah, Chicago Steel has
up,
been sold, and they're not going to be what they used to be. So it is what it is, but good player, should come in and be an impact guy right away.
And he's more of an offensive guy. I mean, Peter talks about how he's gotten better defensively as the year gone on, but he's definitely more of an offensive guy. Despite not being the fastest skater, he's very creative and is a good puck distributor. And you and Peter and you both sort of think he can play center?
Seems like it. It's his listed position, but
all right,
everybody plays center at one point in time.
Like all, if you're a good baseball player, you probably play shortstop.
Yeah, well, yeah,
yeah. All right. So then the third guy we can mention, Christian Humphreys. He's on the USNTDB 2, slightly smaller than the previous mentioned players, 5'10", 170. And he had sort of an injury that curtailed his year. So his points per game in production and sort of overall film are going to be a little bit smaller or not as wide range that you can see of what he's done.
Yeah, he kind of slipped down the board a little bit. I think he was more towards the back end of the first earlier in the year. Now he's more in like that second to third round range. I had an okay year for the NTDP. A little more than a point per game. Nothing particularly wrong with the amount that he scored. It just kind of puts him in that group of guys. It's this year's team was really Hagans, Iserman, and then kind of everybody after that.
Okay.
And Humphreys was in that group. So probably second, third round pick, and seems like a solid player. Can play center, can play other positions at forward. I believe he was an MSU commit originally. He's from the Pittsburgh area, and Michigan flipped him, so that's nice. But should slot in as a top nine forward somewhere, and we'll see what he can do. Probably plays a few years at Michigan, and hopefully he can develop.
Yeah, like we said, a little bit smaller, so maybe not as quick to jump. Peter mentions that he's got a very high hockey IQ, good anticipation and vision on the ice, and is some pretty good foot speed, so kind of fits right in with what we've seen Michigan do with their players recently. And then the last guy is that we can talk about that seems like they're coming in at forward is Mikey Burchill. He was a commit that could have come in this past year, but they deferred him.
Yeah, which probably raises the reason to bring him in.
Because he's already a year out.
If you keep deferring him, then he'll probably go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's kind of at that point where you got to take him or not. His birthday's today, actually.
well, happy birthday.
He's played 2 years in the USHL, one for Dubuque, one for Youngstown. Scoring levels didn't really change. Probably going to be more of a bottom six guy at Michigan. Not a lot else to say than that, but he'll add to the depth and we'll see what he can do.
He's also smaller, right? 5'9", like 160,
yeah. He's listed at 161, so pretty svelte for that height.
Yeah. So that's, you know, four freshmen plus Whitelaw's five. And then, you know, we not sure about Werner. He
maybe
seems
not
to be on his way or maybe not. It looks like they're looking at him. And then
they have a potential COVID shirt for LaPointe as well. So
Michigan's going to get back, presumably, Rucker McGroarty, TJ Hughes, Garrett Shifsky, Nick Moldenauer, Jackson Hallam, Josh Earnessy, Keenan Draper, Mark Estapa, yeah, Philippe LaPointe, and then
Tanner Rowe
would. And so then if they do get Werner, that looks like it would be
That would
15,
be
16,
16, depending on LaPointe.
And they had 14 this past year, which quickly was not enough. So I would see them trying to get to at least 16. I mean, I don't know. You could sit there and say, oh, this guy could transfer out because he won't get playing time. But I don't know. It feels like if Michigan can, they'll ice 13 forwards.
I don't know what LaPointe's situation is going to be because he doesn't have an obvious path to be in the top 12 guys. And if he wants to play one more year of college hockey, then I think it could be possible that he chooses to go somewhere else that could give him a regular role.
I mean, the interesting thing about that is he played probably more games last year than he played in the rest of his career at Michigan combined. And he got a letter, right? So that's a guy who's, and they're bringing back a lot of the other, bringing back, we'll talk about this in a minute, but Truscott. So guys that are getting letters are coming back. The team leadership seems to be sort of staying the same. I mean, Brindley and Duke leave, but you still get McGroarty. And so, we'll go through the defense and the goaltending, and then we can look at some potential lines and pairings to figure it out. Obviously, it's based on nothing other than what our own eyes see. So the defensemen, this is where it gets kind of interesting because Michigan had sort of a lot of bodies, but a couple guys they didn't really want to play last year. And then obviously with the Druskinis thing, and then the Edwards first half injury, things kind of went sideways quickly. But they're going to bring in a transfer from Arizona State, Tim Lovell, who had a very nice year. 5 goals, 32 assists for 37 points. He's 5'10", 165, started his career at BC. I mean, this sort of feels like Seamus Casey to a T. I mean, Casey had what, like, I think 7 goals and ended up with 45 points. So very similar. And if you put Lovell in Michigan last year, he probably gets a few more assists.
Well, he played all situations, which wouldn't necessarily do, at least on the top power play if Casey is back.
Sure.
But he played something like 25, 26 minutes for Arizona State.
It's a lot of minutes.
Graded out pretty well in those like micro stats and all that about his transitions and all that stuff. So seems to be well-liked. I think he had was the number 2 defenseman in the portal, if I remember correctly.
That sounds right.
One of those rankings. So played at Boston College his first year. He kind of seems like a Marshall Warren, sort of. That's like your Marshall Warren replacement, right?
I mean,
plug and play,
a different kind of player, right?
Bring him in.
Warren was a lot bigger, and Lovell had a lot more points.
That's partially just your role. Right?
Okay.
So
you add him to sort of the 4 guys that we'll talk about that they're definitive. It seems like they're getting back, and you have a lot of what you're, the top 6 that you're icing are going to be. But they are bringing in a handful of freshmen. Supposedly, Hunter Haiti is a large human who looks to be more on the defensive side than offensive defenseman.
Big guy, 6'4", 205 is what he's listed at. Right shot, 7 points in 53 games with the Chicago Steel. He turns 20 this summer. Interesting profile.
But this is what you wanted, right? Like, you getting tired of watching a bunch of 5'10 defensemen skate around, and this guy is not that.
Depends on if he can play, but
well, sure. But we're talking about from a physical profile.
It's a nice thing to restock now that you lost Steve Holtz. Like, you need at least somebody that has a different sort of physical profile, and we'll see what he can do.
Yeah. And then DRM, I'll let you pronounce his name. Dakota
Rayon Mullen.
Rayon Mullen. And he is a smaller defenseman?
6 foot, 181.
So,
normal size.
Normal size guy.
Left shot. He played on the NTDP, 18 points in 56 games. The interesting thing about him is he is 17 until December 18th.
So he's really young.
Quite young.
And it does seem like he will be coming in this year and not be pushed out a year?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, he played with the NTDP. Typically, those guys come in unless something went awry.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem like anything really did, so he should probably be on the team, and we'll see what he what he can do. I mean, these guys in Haiti and DRM, it's hard for us to really say because defensemen are really hard to get a grasp of if they're not in the NHL draft discussion, if they're not like a high-scoring kind. I mean, defenseman scoring stats are not that useful because they mostly just tell you about power play usage. So,
Jack Double L Wilson is the next freshman. He was, we talked about him last year, right? Because he could have come in this past
they
year.
They deferred him.
But he got deferred.
Yes.
And now it seems like, from what you read online, that he'll be entering the fray.
I assume he'll be coming in. He turned 19 a few weeks ago. He's already been deferred once. Kind of feels like a guy you need to bring in if you're going to bring him in.
You seem to think he's might be a player eventually.
Well, he's played 2 years in the USHL.
Mm-hmm.
So that, if you do that, generally you become a starting defenseman somewhere in college hockey.
Okay.
And I'm interested to see, you know, if he can do that for Michigan, right? Like, it's, when we talk about the historical scratches, I mean, Josh Arico last year was playing in the NHL.
Yeah.
And Brendan Miles, I believe, was also in the NHL. Let me pull that up real quick.
I think Miles was a walk-on when he got here.
The point is, if you're sort of following that path, then generally you're not playing the USHL. USHL is a real league with real players.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's played 2 years in the USHL. And so I kind of like the idea of bringing in a guy like that who's actually played. And the other thing is his age, too.
He's older.
Right. So Brendan Miles, when he came in, he was already 21.
Oh, boy.
Or 20. And that was the same thing for, like, Steve Holtz.
Yeah.
Like, if you're 20 or 21 playing in the NHL, it's not happening for you.
Yeah.
As, like, a starting defenseman in Michigan. But if you're 19 and you've played 2 years in the USHL, like, that's a real profile.
Yeah.
So he won't probably be needed next year, but you can see what he could turn into down the line. And I think it's a useful take to see what you could have in some years in the future.
Well, and we're going to talk about one other guy, but then especially with what happened last year where you get the Edwards injury and your skin just doesn't make the roster, and then all of a sudden you're looking around and being like, we don't have that many defensemen. So the last guy that will potentially be coming in, it seems like, is Jenedy Chaley? Chaley?
Something like that.
Brisson? So we might have to learn how to pronounce his name, at least sometime between now and the fall. He's an interesting guy that you were talking to me about as like a kind of goes for it defenseman.
It seems that way. That's sort of what his elite prospects scouting report seems to say, a guy that kind of gambles and takes risks, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and we'll see how that pays off for him.
Do you like that, or is that something that you'd be like, hey, time to rein it in, guy?
What I think you can say about him that's interesting is that it gives you some sort of Casey insurance, in that if you bring Casey back, then you can kind of let Chaley simmer.
Mm-hmm.
And if Casey signs in July, then, we got this right shot defenseman who likes to play with the puck and create offense, and you can kind of plug him in.
Mm-hmm.
So another guy that kind of rose a little bit, he had 14 points last year and 41 games. This year he got up to 28 in 58 games. He was committed to Vermont, and elite prospects still thinks he is. Michigan flipped him about a month and a half ago, early March. So that was a late pickup for them, another Russian guy. And
so zero Russians to two Russians. It's like your dream.
Yeah, this is quite the change.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 potential new defensemen, including Tim Lovell. As of right now, it seems like they're getting Casey back. We haven't heard anything otherwise.
Nothing official.
The Devils' season is over. Their AHL team season is over. He's not going to go play anywhere this year. He could obviously sign a pro deal and play, you know, go to camp and then start out, but nothing has happened so far.
One question I have with the Casey situation is the possibility that he could be waiting to be traded potentially.
In the summer? Oh, like at the draft?
Yeah, that kind of thing. That
okay.
The Devils could be saying, look, dude, we don't have room for you on the NHL team. We're not sure if we can offer you an ELC at this point in time, but you're a prospect. We're kind of blocked at your position on the depth chart. We're looking to get a goalie. there's a chance we could trade you to Calgary for Jacob Markstrom, and the Flames could be like, hey, step right up.
We don't want first-round picks. We'll take second-round picks from several years ago.
We'll bring Casey in, and he can play right away.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that could definitely happen. So we'll see what happens on that front.
But as of right now, it does seem like he'll be coming back from what we've heard. Tyler Duke, his pairing mate, I guess, seems to be coming back as well.
He wasn't drafted, and he hasn't shown up on any UDFA lists, so.
Ethan Edwards.
He is back, I think.
I don't know if he, I mean.
Truscott's announced.
Truscott has said that he's coming back, so that's four. Luca, I mean, again, like, could Luca hit the portal? Sure, I suppose, but as of right now, it seems like he's coming back. And then you have Orico and Miles. So five, Casey Duke Edwards is eight, Truscott Luca is 10, Orico Miles, and then there was another guy that we didn't really talk about, Brian Lonergan, because no one really knows, and I don't think I've ever heard of a team having 13 defensemen before.
So Brian Lonergan was committed to Michigan. I believe his Elite Prospects page still lists him as committed to Michigan. Let me pull that.
Well, on College Hockey News, he's listed under recruits coming in, but it just seems like a lot of guys.
Yeah, he is still listed on Elite Prospects. And if you pull up his Twitter, his bio says 05 Michigan Hockey commit.
Okay.
He has not tweeted anything in several years, but he has liked a post 4 days ago from Dmitry Filipovich of a Jack Eichel goal.
So he's watching the Vegas Golden Knights hockey games.
And he liked Frank Nazar's pass to Brindley in the tournament.
I also liked that pass. Did you like that pass, Alex?
And he liked the Michigan headed to the Frozen Four thing.
I mean, hey.
So he is using...
Seems like he's on the right
so
track.
He is using this account in the last month to like Michigan content, which would...
Just stalking these kids on social media.
Which would suggest that he is indeed still interested in coming to Michigan.
Yeah.
But he has been conspicuously absent from the future Blue Ice...
And he's an 05.
He's a December 05, so he's easily a guy you could defer.
Okay.
And I think that at this point in time would be the safe bet of what is going on.
Well, if he doesn't come in and they don't lose anyone, that's 12 defensemen. I can't even get that out without laughing. I don't really know what to say other than that's a lot of people. And, you know, we'll talk about goalies and then take a break and then sort of attempt to piece together who will be where in a lineup, but, I mean, it's not bad to have bodies, but at some point, like, I don't know if I'll get a press credential because the scratches section might spill down into the entire press box, but after last year, that might not be a bad thing. Okay, so the goalies, two new guys are coming in because I believe, well, West went into the portal, and I highly, highly doubt he's coming back. Barcheski signed with the Colorado Eagles. Andrew Albano is out of eligibility, even though he probably redshirted this year, because I don't think he played at all, let alone enough to count for a year, but it has not been confirmed or denied what he's doing. Regardless, he didn't play a minute for Michigan. I'm not guessing he will play a minute next year, even if he is on the team. So the two guys, one, the transfer, Logan Stein from Ferris State, was 5-13-1, had a 2.90 and then a 9.10 save percentage. But he was at Ferris State in the CCHA, which you thought was worse than Atlantic Hockey last year.
Bad conference, and
yes.
Ferris State was a very bad team.
Yes.
So that already makes the situation difficult to assess. At Ferris State this season, 74% on the penalty kill. They gave up 33.3 shots per game.
I guess that's not that
took
many.
29.5.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't a good team.
Not a very good team.
No.
And so that colors the sort of situation that he was playing in. He is from, his birthplace is listed as Suwanee, Georgia.
Oh, that's very close to where I used to live.
He played with Waterloo in the USHL.
Okay.
He posted an 8.93 1 year and then a 9.11 the next year.
Well, that's all right.
Solid.
Yeah.
Went to Ferris State. 887 the first year.
Oof.
885 the next year.
Oof.
879 the year after that. And then 910 this year.
All right. We've made the jump. 1 year.
So I don't really know what to say about that. He just turned 23.
I mean, we'll talk about the next guy, but it does not seem like they're bringing him in to be a Barczewski situation.
So I think when Brian was talking about wanting the RIT goalie,
yeah,
if Michigan was going to bring in Cameron Corpy, they were not going to be able to get the RIT goalie.
Because one of those guys was going to be like...
If the RIT goalie was going to be like, I've got one more year to play, I'm going to play every game.
I'm Jacob Barczewski.
And if you're going to bring in a developmental goalie who wants to get some time, then that's not a great... situation, whereas Logan Stein is like, oh, sure, why not?
I'll play another one at a league a lot higher than I've ever played in and maybe have a shot to go on a tournament run.
And so fundamentally, it gives Michigan two sort of lottery tickets for this season. And Logan Stein is one of them. If he could be 9-10 on that Ferris State team,
I mean,
got no issue with that. Extrapolate it to Michigan.
What do you think that is? I don't think it's 9-10, though. I mean, if he's 9-10 at Michigan, that's better than they've gotten the last 2 years. So
it's true. So
I would expect him to sort of be the leader in the clubhouse to start because he has the experience, and they would probably lean on him to at least a guy who's played a lot of college hockey. And then, you know, we'll talk about Corpy in a second, but then if Corpy comes along and sort of starts to hit it, then... you know, he can potentially take over, and they'll probably still give Stein some games every now and then because, you know, you're starting a freshman, and unless there's a definitively clear starter, you kind of have, like you said, two guys who maybe one of them can at least work out on a weekend type of a thing. So Cam Corpy was committed to, was it Western?
Western.
I think, and he is in the USHL. Is he older as well?
He turns 20 in Memorial Day. So
he's been deferred, or not deferred, but like he hasn't come in for a year or two now.
Yeah.
So he's got to come out of the USHL.
More than likely. Yeah. He's from South Lyon, so a guy in the area.
Local kid.
Looks like from his Elite Prospects page that his dad was a coach of some kind in local hockey. It also looks like he's got two brothers. One of them is older than him and plays at Union currently, and the other one is 15, so he is not playing at Union. And Corpy played in the NAHL for a year with Oklahoma Warriors, 923. Then he moved up to the USHL that season and played 21 games, 9-11.
Yeah.
This season, 892. Now, I don't know.
There's context.
Goaltending is so hard to figure out. Especially if you don't watch the league, you don't really know the situation that's going on there. Goalies can be placed in certain situations and really thrive, and in other situations and can really not perform very well. And so... don't really know. The one thing I will say is that the other goalies on that team didn't seem to do any better. So, in fact, they did worse. Ivan Zhvigalov, who appears to have been a Colorado Avalanche draft pick some years ago.
Oh, he does sound familiar. Okay.
Played 9 games for them with an 884. Ty Levy played 1 game with an 844. And Thatcher Bernstein played 7 games with an 826.
Thatcher.
So, seems to me that this was probably not a great defensive team. They did win a lot of games, so maybe they're just kind of a run-and-gun squad. Not sure exactly. But, obviously, you would have liked him to have a 9-15 and we could all feel good and reassured. But, we'll see. He's 6'4". That's nice. There'll probably be some development that we'll need to go into it, and then we'll see what happens from there.
I forgot to read Stein's... notes that are Peter's notes on Logan Stein. He's also a larger guy too. I don't think we talked about that. 6'3", 205. But Peter saw him a few times because he went to different games around the state and did get to see him in person. Says he likes his puck tracking. He's got a great catching hand, decent foot movement, and he plays composed and has a high level of compete. So you know, those are good things. And from me, I generally trust Peter's takes on stuff, especially when he gets to see him live. So, you know, that's a solid thing. I think, again, it probably starts with Stein. And then, you know, it's like, all right, Corpy, when you're ready to win this job, go take it. Because it feels like Michigan's kind of, to some extent, going to know what they're going to get with Stein, because he has a lot under his belt. And then, you know, like you said, Corpy, slightly of a developmental prospect, but hopefully one of them, at least one of the two, works out pretty well next year.
That's the hope.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924-9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack.
Okay, well, those were all of the players that we think, hope, could be on Michigan's hockey team next year. In some ways, it seems hard to believe that all of them will be, because like, that is enough to run probably an offense, defense, and special teams in football. So they will. It right now, it looks like they could have a lot of bodies. Can we fit them into lines and pairings, though? So at forward, you and I talked about, well, let's keep Werner off of this because he's not official. So that's 15 guys that we could theoretically try to fit into 12 to 13 spots. So, I mean, it feels like Rutgers probably going to be on the top line.
Yep.
Centered by either what?
Probably TJ Hughes.
TJ, and then...
You can put Greeden on that line. Then you could try something like Hallam, Shifsky, Whitelaw.
So you'd put Shifsky maybe at center?
Have a fun line there, then try Humphreys, Hage, Moldenauer. That could be a fun line.
Oh, like a...
Like younger guys line.
Yeah.
And then Ernest, Draper, Estapa as a fourth line.
I mean, that's kind of a fun line, don't you think, that fourth line?
Yep.
I mean, it's something different that Michigan doesn't have, hasn't really had in a long time. So that's potentially 12, and then you have guys like Rowe... And
LaPointe maybe,
Burchill. And then Burchill.
He could sub in. I mean, the nice thing about Burchill is that he could play a little bit higher than some of those guys can play. I mean, Ernesy could too. So
yeah.
You have some flexibility.
I think putting Ernesy on any of the top three lines, depending how his summer goes and how he looks in like fall camp and everything, is a possibility. I do kind of like the idea of having that massive fourth line with a bunch of guys that can check and hit and finish. So as far as centers go, you know, it feels like, what does Michigan kind of max out with center? They have TJ Hughes play a lot of center. Shifsky's played some center at times over this year. Hage is going to be drafted as a center.
Probably.
And then Humphreys is listed as a center. And then, I mean, Draper's played effective bottom
six.
Played
a lot of center.
Yeah, especially in the bottom six.
Estapa's played center. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you can use there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, those are two guys you probably would not want any lower than, or any higher than the third line.
Sure.
I think. So, that's something to work with, and it looks like they could have some guys to rotate in. If Werner came in, let's hypothetically, he'd probably be, what, a middle six wing?
Yeah, something like that.
Something.
Third line, probably.
Depending on what else is... who's in and out and hurt and that kind of thing. So it looks like, I mean, that what you're talking about has some upside because you'd have a lot of guys. Well, you'd have your top line, which would be, I think, pretty effective. And then you have, you know, still a solid second line. And then a third line that's freshmen that have high upside. And so you could potentially come up with three lines that could score.
Yeah, I think the story of this team would be probably better scoring depth, a little probably worse top-line talent.
Yeah.
And hopefully that sort of evens out.
A little more Penn State than than Michigan, but Penn State on steroids with some actual draft picks.
Yep.
And then let's go to defense. So assuming Casey comes back, you can have Casey and Duke playing together. They played together for a lot of this year, mostly effective. Obviously, they're smaller, but you know, they still complement each other really well in a lot of ways. And then you can go Truscott and Edwards, who've played together at times over the last couple of years. So you have two pairs that you kind of know what you're going to get there. You bring in Tim Lovell. I mean, he could fit in.
I would expect that Lovell will play
top four.
Yeah, I mean, he was an all-situations guy for Arizona State. So I would kind of think maybe Lovell and Edwards, Duke and Casey.
And then Truscott. And then depending on, I mean, there's so,
Hunter Haney probably has the inside track.
You think so?
Just because he's right shot.
I mean,
if Casey's playing, then it does, I don't know how much utility you need for Chaley, but he would be your other right shot guy to put. I mean, Truscott can play the right, so.
Wilson seems like a guy who's more than a year out.
Probably not going to play a ton.
DRM's also insanely young. So them getting pushed down, Luca. I mean, Luca.
You have a lot of flexibility and not a lot of holes if Casey's back. So it gives you a lot of options, and not everyone has to be pressed into duty right away.
Right. I don't think we'll be seeing Orico and Miles, and then you can kind of pick your spots with Wilson, Chaley, DRM, and you still have Luca, who you know was serviceable at times this year. Isn't a bad guy that you have to fit in. You kind of know to an extent what you're going to get. You need to protect him a little bit, but will be in his third year and you know older, more minutes under his belt. So they'll definitely have guys. It doesn't seem like there should be a ton of drop off in terms of even production, really. I mean, because, I mean, Warren came on at the end, but, you know, you'd get a full year, hypothetically, of Ethan Edwards. Obviously, you bring Casey back. I mean, they could still be a team that can create from the back as well.
Yeah, and they'll have a lot of puck moving as they normally do. Doesn't really matter what sort of grouping they really go with.
Because they'll have enough guys to put them on every line.
And yep.
Each line should be able to have a breakout puck rusher. And then in goal, I mean, we just kind of talked about this. It just feels like right now you're going to line them both up and say, all right, somebody go win the job. Unless you get a third guy that comes out of nowhere that neither of us have any idea.
That would be surprising.
But hopefully it sticks together for a little bit anyway. All right. So the last couple things, you know, we've talked about the playoffs, previewing them a few weeks ago, and then last week, you know, they had started, and each series had about a game under their belt, maybe not quite that much. Now we're a little bit in, and one series has officially ended, so I don't think we have a whole lot of takes on Washington and the Rangers. That series went about as we expected. I assume you don't have anything to...
I mean, the biggest thing about the playoffs right now is that these series have mostly been bad. Like, there's been very little intrigue in a lot of these series.
Well, there's one out west, I think there's some intrigue.
Rangers and Caps has just been... That one was asleep.
It was never... Was it ever close? Interesting? I honestly didn't really watch much of it because... I mean, if the Capitals had stolen a game or at least looked like they were going to play really well in multiple games, I might have turned it on, but I never really believed that.
Islanders and...
So the weird thing about that...
Carolina, once they blew that game too, then it was like, oh, this is over.
The Islanders played well in like four of those games, and just lost them all, except for the one they won. I was really hoping it was Bortuzzo's goal in overtime. I was trying to explain to somebody, like, if Bortuzzo had scored, it would have been, Josh Arico scoring? Something like that? Anyway, yeah, it feels like it's, you know, the Canes are going to win. The Islanders could have had two or three of the games, but couldn't close the one out, couldn't finish enough goals in the other ones. Feels like Kane's probably five, maybe six, depending on how tonight goes. And then there's...
Tampa, Florida hasn't been that interesting.
Well, did you think that it was going to be closer? It's 3-1 currently.
Yeah, the Island. I mean, the Lightning got that second game. They were really in that game. You had the one crazy save from Bobrovsky.
And was that one of the best saves you'd ever seen?
Yeah, that's a classic. Just
throw your
just a lock save, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just
flail,
putting it out there, and the guy shot it into him. So, yeah. But the Panthers have looked really good. They've looked really good, and the Lightning haven't been able to prevent goals well enough, and maybe the Lightning will keep pushing and we'll get a game six or something, but it feels like the Panthers have got that series. So I think right now every series is 3-1 and there's one that's 2-1 and we're waiting to see if Dallas can win game four. But
yeah,
it's been a very weird situation without a lot of tight series so far.
I won't make you talk about Toronto and Boston if you don't want to.
Well, that's a long conversation that has to be
has to be had off
air. I mean, there's not a lot. There's a lot of stuff that's being said about the Leafs in general, and that's its own conversation. But the series itself isn't all that interesting. One team's got a much better goalie than the other one, and one team has a lot better special teams.
Did you think that was
happens?
Did you think that was inevitable that they were going to go to Swayman? Because they in game two they went to
Ullmark in game two,
and he didn't play poorly, did he?
He played fine.
Yeah.
It's just the season that Swayman has just dominated the Leafs at a level that's pretty insane.
Okay.
I think he's played six games now against them this season between regular season playoffs, and he has like a 970 in those games. Like, you know, that's kind of beyond belief in some ways. So
970?
Yeah. I think they've scored one against him in like five of the six, and they scored two in the other one. And they cannot score on this guy. Uh-huh. They cannot score against him. Whereas Ullmark, they've scored three, I think, against him. Okay. So,
which still isn't even a lot.
I think it could end up hurting Boston in the long run, just because, like, this is how they've done it this whole season, is they alternate.
Yeah.
And I think that it's potential that the reason they've had success is the fact that they rotate and the guys are always fresh, and that playing Swayman over and over again could potentially change that. But that's probably a problem for next round or further down the line. It makes sense for this series. But at the end of the day, Bruins have been a much better coach, better organized, better team in this series, and that's why they're ahead. So,
but that's not over either. It's still 3-1. Game five is, I believe, Tuesday night.
Yeah, the problem is that Nylander didn't play the first three games. He looked very rusty in game four. Marner has been bad, but also still probably isn't healthy from that ankle sprain. Matthews missed practice again today after missing the third period because he's...
Did he take on Nylander's illness?
He's got a chronic, some sort of illness going on. The Leafs get sick, I feel like, more than any other team. I don't know what the story is with
they need
that,
a nutritionist.
It's a very strange situation, but...
We can move out west to all the crazy series there. Did you stay up for Edmonton and the Kings?
Last night
in the 1-0 game?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. The Edmonton Oilers don't get outshot much, but in this one they were like 35
to
13. Didn't
they have 13 shots? How's that happen?
Yeah, it was,
you don't have an answer. Well,
they were getting outplayed for the first couple periods, and then they basically just decided to do the we're going in a shell in the third period. Mm. And you're going to shoot a lot, and we're just going to stop it.
Hope that Skinner makes saves, which he did.
Yep.
And that series now,
series
I mean, I thought...
feels over.
Yeah, I mean...
What's beyond belief about that series is the fact that they've played three straight years, and over those 3 years, those three series, the Oilers' power play is firing at like 45% across three series.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous. I know Edmonton's got a great power play. We all know that stuff. But to do that every single year, what's going on in LA? How have they found no answers for this?
Well, they don't have a goalie.
It doesn't, like, just
and they,
get some different players, get some...
Isn't their PK generally good?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Maybe it's the Swayman effect, or the inverse Swayman effect. But
so the Oilers look like they're moving on.
Did you watch the end of that Nashville and Vancouver?
That was
I mean, Nashville completely owned that game. And then in the last, like, what, 2.5 minutes?
Scored twice in the final 3 minutes, both with
six on five.
Yep.
And the last one with, like, 5 seconds left, 6 seconds left, and then they score, like, a minute and a half in overtime.
After an insane play by Hughes at the blue line to shake the defenseman and then get it down low. And Nashville missed an empty netter that was a pretty bad miss.
Well, yeah, and he hits the inside of the post.
Yep.
That's sort of like the Capitals and Panthers of 2 years ago?
Well, that was a shot from like 150 feet.
Sure, but it hits the post, and if it goes in, that series is
different. This was a shot from like the circle.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty bad.
It is a little closer.
It's one of the worst chokes in a single game I've ever seen.
Worse than Patrick Stefan?
Well, that's a regular season game. It's playoffs, so... And I believe, didn't the Stars win that game? Isn't that like the famous part of the story is that they ended up winning after Stefan blew that
play? Oh, in the overtime?
In the overtime,
because
yeah.
The Oilers score, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, point is, great rally from the Canucks. They have shouldered immense adversity in the series.
Yeah, because they're playing 7 goalies, right?
They've had 3 wins to start a series with 3 different goalies. I don't know how often that's happened.
How long is Demko out? Because
unclear.
So he has the Nylander injury. Just no one knows what's wrong with these people.
We know it's a knee.
Okay.
And that's not great because his previous injury had been a knee.
Also, for a goalie.
Supposedly a different part of the knee. It sounds like he can come back sometime in round 2, maybe, towards the back half of that series. I don't know. If they can get him back at some point, that helps. Definitely dampens the situation right now. But the Canucks play a pretty goalie-friendly style, and the guys they've used in relief aren't nobodies, right? This isn't...
This isn't
Vasilevsky getting injured, and it's like, well, the series is over. Yes, we don't have a backup of any kind.
Yeah.
DeSmith's been a very solid backup for a long time in the NHL, and Archer Shelovs is not a top prospect, but he is a prospect.
He played
really well for Latvia at the World Championships last year, where he dragged a carcass to the bronze medal, ironically defeating Casey DeSmith and Team USA in the bronze medal game. Shelovs has played 2 years at Abbotsford with a decent save percentage, so he's a guy.
Okay.
I mean, he's not... there have definitely been worse goalies that have had to play NHL games in the playoffs.
Isn't Edmonton calling up Jack Campbell again?
On emergency duty, not sure what's going on there. I mean, the Penguins had to play that Louis Domingue guy.
Yeah. He was actually okay in that series.
Until he wasn't.
Well, okay.
But I think, just if you look at the track records, both DeSmith and Shelovs are better than Louis Domingue. So
are they all better than Michael Hutchinson?
I would say yes. Yeah. And so I think that they can continue to rumble along for a bit, but they will need Demko back at some point.
They probably will need him if they face the Oilers.
More than likely.
Yeah. And it feels like they'll probably beat Nashville. If Nashville had won that game yesterday, it was 2-2, and you know, you go in and you don't face Demko, you might be able to steal game 5, and then you have a shot.
So part of
the
thought process on the DeSmith thing was that they basically felt that because they were up in the series and they had restored home ice, they were like, well, we can kind of blow a game if necessary.
Yeah.
We need DeSmith healthy for game 5, so we'll play Shelovs. But now, kind of wonder if Shelovs gets to go in game 5.
Just give him the shot.
And say DeSmith, if Shelovs loses, then we go back to DeSmith for game 6.
Mm.
And we'll let him get a shot. I don't know. That'll be fascinating to see.
Let him rest one more, couple more days.
This is the playoffs, though. Like, it's very common that notable players get injured for a period of times, and you got to have depth. So,
yep. The Avs and Jets, very different situation than when we talked about last week. I don't even know what to say. Georgiev looked like he was retiring, and now he's at least almost good, if not been pretty good.
He's played some solid games for them. And
their defense has been really good, I think, in watching.
The Jets have looked horrendous. No coaching going on. They look like a mess out there. The big thing is games 2 and 3, they were in a good position in those games.
After the second period.
I mean, game 2, they score to go up 2-1 on that little tip pass across.
Yep.
Connor drills the post like not long after, and it felt like they, you know, they're playing well.
Yeah.
And then it just fell apart.
Well,
and
they took bad penalties.
Well, and then in game three, they're up 2-1 after two. They were playing low event. They were doing exactly what they wanted to do. Hellebuyck looked sharp. And I went into the third period and said, this is a huge period for the Jets. They can restore order to the series. And in the first 2.5 minutes, they take 6 minutes worth of penalties. And it's just like, what are we doing here?
And they're not.
And their penalty kill looks awful. It looks so bad.
So,
and it doesn't help that their defense is getting shredded and Hellebuyck is not making a lot of saves.
How much do you put? I mean, so the Avs put more goals on Hellebuyck in this series than he's probably given up in months. But what? How much do you actually put on him versus the rest of the defensive unit that they, you know, claim is the best in the NHL?
I would say that the blame for the series is 70% defense, 30% goaltending.
Yeah.
Anytime that you have an 870, you've been bad. That's just
well, yeah.
Fact.
I mean, I don't think anyone's...
There's no way that you can get to that point and not have some blame on you.
No one thinks he's been elite.
That game two, he lets a breakaway goal, Josh Manson out of the penalty back. It's like, you're Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah, you have to stop that.
Make a save.
Also, don't give the puck away behind your own net.
Oh,
that was even
that
worse.
That was so bad. It's
yeah.
just like, so he is a culprit in this series, without question. But it's the only way you give up that many goals is if your defense has been bad and your goaltender has also been bad. And that's how you give up five every single game.
Well, and the interesting thing is it's not even just Rantanen and MacKinnon. Like, this is like, Nichushkin has 4 goals and Lehkonen has 4 goals and Mittelstadt has like a crazy amount of assists. And so that's the one thing that is interesting about Colorado is like, you know, they're not that top line and then nothing anymore. It looks like they finally have a 2C and they're getting a ton of scoring depth.
The Jets have allowed 11.6 expected goals against a 5-on-5, the most of any team in the playoffs so far. So it's a dual-step problem here.
Yeah.
And it's why they look pretty cooked.
So there was yappings after the game. Do you start Brossoit in Game 5?
You can't start Brossoit.
I mean, you wouldn't think so.
I don't understand why Rick Bonus was scratching Cole Perfetti in that.
That is kind of weird, especially when they needed to bring in somebody anyway, and they brought in a guy from the minors.
Yeah, who's a nobody.
Yeah. I mean, Perfetti's played well this year, right?
Yeah.
And they refused to put him on the ice?
Bonus is a classic old school coach.
I see.
The scourge of young players must be eliminated from the NHL.
Get rid of anyone under 30. And then the last one is the only series that has not played 4 games yet, Dallas and Vegas, where...
There will be 4 games by the time people listen.
Okay. Well, but we cannot talk about Game 4.
No.
As of currently. Where it pays to be the visiting team, I guess, in this series, as no home team has won a game yet.
Vegas has looked pretty bad, to be honest. The good news is Logan Thompson's playing really well.
Yeah.
And he gave them a shot to steal Game 3. They couldn't pull it off, but... If you look at that expected goals against at 5-on-5, they have given up the second most of any team at 5-on-5, and they've played one fewer games than the other team. This isn't a rate metric. That's a cumulative metric, and they've given up that many in one fewer game.
So you think Dallas has been the better team?
They've been the better team. And
do you think they have the higher ceiling in the playoffs?
Yeah, because they're definitely the better team. The issue has been that Jake Oettinger has continued to not be special, and Logan Thompson has been really good. And we'll see if Thompson can continue. Tonight's a huge game. If Vegas wins tonight, they're in the driver's seat and in a really good spot. And if Dallas wins, it'll kind of feel like, oh, the Logan Thompson-Lin Sanity run might be ending. And this is back in cruise control position for Dallas. We'll see. Big, big game.
It's at 10:30 tonight, I think. So
I think 9:30.
9:30. All right. That's our NHL update. And one last trip through the stickball sports where your Michigan softball has started blasting the ball and has won 13 games in a row. Is that correct?
13, I believe.
And they are definitively in second place, at least, in the Big Ten.
They have secured a top...
Aren't they ranked? Didn't the rankings come out?
They slipped into 25th
I think,
Softball America poll today,
okay.
Which I don't really care about, but...
So they're in the tournament, right?
I don't think that is a sort of misrepresentation of where they are nationally. I think they're around that spot. Yeah, they're going to get in the tournament unless they face plant against Ohio State this weekend. As long as they take care of business at home against a pretty mediocre Ohio State team, then they're probably in. They moved up to 35th, I think, in RPI. You generally want to be top 40.
Mm-hmm.
They're 17-3, so they're guaranteed to finish top two in the conference.
How many teams make the softball tournament?
Everybody.
Oh, so it's not like baseball.
It's a single elimination 14-team tournament.
Okay.
As opposed to double elim 8-team.
So,
they've played well, and I think the biggest thing continues to be just the manner in which that they can find ways to win games. And it isn't easy to grind games out, and they've won a lot of games that are sort of like you'd expect a veteran team to win games. They've had to rally big time against Iowa. Then this past weekend, they were playing Penn State, who has one of the best pitchers in the Big Ten, and Bridget Nemeth, and they had to play lower scoring games, mm-hmm. including on Sunday, where they were one out away from winning in regulation, and then the Penn State tied it. They had to go to extra innings, and they just kept battling and just kept grinding and found a way to scratch those wins out. And it's been not easy. It's taken a lot of fight. And you can't be anything but impressed with the way they've played.
Well, and they didn't start overly well.
Nope.
And it seemed like there were changes that were going to need to be made. And now it looks like, I mean, they could, if they get the right draw, could even potentially come out of a regional. They're starting
to play. They need the pitching to deliver. And thankfully, this weekend, Drakowski had a nice bounce back. She was really good in those two games against Penn State. And Penn State's an okay offensive team. Michigan's hitting has continued to be really good, and that's what you want to see. So I think they've got probably the best offense in the conference, at least in conference games. And they need help this weekend. They need Northwestern to lose one game to Indiana and then to sweep Ohio State to win the regular season title. But even if they don't, they'll have a top two seed in Iowa City in the Big Ten tournament. And given the way that Northwestern and Michigan have kind of separated themselves from the field, you'd expect them to meet on Mother's Day for the championship, and hopefully they could win that. I think they deserve another crack at the Cats.
The Wildcats. The other stickball sport, baseball, not quite in as good a shape, but in much better shape than they were a couple months ago when it looked like an absolutely lost season. Now they're in contention to, you know, win the Big Ten. It's going to be tougher because they have a couple of good teams left, but they're actually maybe playing watchable baseball, and they got to pound the dirt bags three times.
Yeah, they beat Long Beach State, including, I think, a pretty gutty win on Friday where they had to come back, win that game. They're in good position to make the Big Ten tournament. That's nice to see. They've got a healthy lead on the cutoff there,
mm-hmm.
and they're in a pileup right at the top of the conference, two teams at 11-4, and then they're tied with two teams at 10-5.
So they're in the top five.
Yep. Five teams all separated by one game, and we'll see what they can do. They have continued to take two out of three basically every weekend.
Except for this past weekend, when they took three out of three.
Which wasn't a conference game.
Well, right.
And so they just got to keep doing that and keep chipping away, and they've been able to find more answers with their pitching.
That's always good.
They've gotten better pitching from Kurt Barr.
Been their best this year, right?
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Mitch Voigt's been useful, especially as of late. Jacob Denner, who's been in a very up-and-down Michigan career, has been finishing it on a better note.
Is this his last year?
Yes, he's a fifth year.
Okay.
And Chase Allen has still been like their midweek guy. Will Rogers helps out. It's not a good pitching staff, but there's been enough of them to cobble together wins, and their hitters have shown up. And so I think overall it's been a solid season for them, and we'll see how they can finish it up.
Well, especially how they started. Like, you're actually making something of it, and this may not be a tournament team, but, you know, if you can at least have a run at the conference title in the last few weeks and make the tournament, and, you know, who knows, you win a couple games, get hot, anything can happen. And kind of like a little bit of what we said about softball and, you know, what we're hoping for basketball for next year a little bit is like, just go back to playing watchable sport, like whatever it is. Like, I don't, you know, don't make me be like, oh, you're on and I don't even want to watch it. Like, you can go to some baseball games now and be like, you know, they actually play okay baseball.
Yeah. I think it's a multi-year rebuild.
Yeah.
And now it's a matter of, you know, are they what steps can they take in the future, but at the very least to not be falling into irrelevancy in the Big Ten while you're rebuilding is a good thing.
But it's also good to see progression throughout the year.
Yep.
And you want to see teams get better as the year goes on, and I think we're seeing that with a lot of the teams that we've talked about here, with baseball, softball, hockey was also in that category. All right, so that's pretty much it for our season. Do you have any summer plans, any trips, any summer bucket lists that you're wanting to share with the listeners before we sign off one last time?
Not yet.
Nothing?
No.
Will you? Do you have trips in mind, even if you don't share them?
Nothing set yet.
Okay.
Working on it.
Yeah. Well, good. I hope you get to go see some people, do some things, spend some time in the sun. I have a few trips lined up, some plans that hopefully will be able to be undertaken, and fun things to do. Hopefully you listeners do as well. Get out, get in the sun, do some fun things, and then we'll be back at the end of September when hopefully we'll have more of the definitive answers for you with some of this roster.
Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 6.26 for Alex Trey and David Nasternak. You spent a half a year with us, now there will be a half year without us.